In the world of political podcasts, there are experts, there are pundits, and then there's Tom Powell. Happy Friday, and welcome to another episode of the Second Half Podcast with Tom Powell. Remember, if you're listening to this, that means you made it through another week, and margaritas are in order. And now your host, Tom Powell.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. As the man in the intro said, this is the Second Half Podcast, and I am Tom Powell. This is the point in each podcast episode where I give you a reason to go get those margaritas he told you were in order, and this week it's because Donald Trump is finally on trial for criminal activities. No more civil trials, no more financial judgments. We are now into a trial that will decide his freedom. So, go get yourself a pitcher of margaritas and celebrate accordingly. But don't overdo it. Don't do too much, because we're going to have a lot of celebrating to do at the tail end of all of this when this motherfucker is found guilty. So, just a pitcher of margaritas tonight, okay? Another reason to celebrate this weekend is because we have a wedding in the family that we will be attending this weekend, so the family grows by one more yet again. All right. Excuse me one moment, please. Damn. Before we get into the news that we're going to talk about on this week's episode, as always, a brief reminder to go visit oldhippiemedia.com. That's my website. Once again, that's oldhippie, H-I-P-P-I-E, media.com. There you're going to find anything you want to know about me, including a link to my other podcast, Off Topic with Tom Powell, available only on Patreon, where I interview people from all walks of life about their life experiences, the projects they've got going on. There's some pretty interesting conversations over there. Go give it a look. Once again, that is on Patreon only, and it's called Off Topic with Tom Powell. At that website of mine, you're also going to find a link on where you can buy my books. I have two self-published books available in paperback and ebook formats. You're going to find a link to my store. I have merch just like anybody else. T-shirts, hoodies, coasters, magnets, wine tumblers, you name it. We have it. You're going to find my blog articles. I try to do an article every Wednesday, so make sure you subscribe there with your email so you'll get an email alert when a new one goes up. You're going to find links on where you can follow me on all of the various social media sites, links to other podcasts and articles that I've appeared in, links on how to contact me, and more. Once again, that is oldhippiemedia.com. Now, what is happening this week? Well, a little bit of non-political news to begin with, and that would be that the Bears have announced plans for a new domed stadium along the lakefront. And I got to be honest with you, I am all in favor of this particular idea. I'm going to read to you now from ABC 7 News, and then we're going to discuss very briefly. The Chicago Bears unveiled details on the team's plan for a new lakefront stadium on Wednesday. The Bears are planning to build a state-of-the-art domed lakefront stadium costing an estimated $4.7 billion. The team is asking for the cost to be covered by a combination of public and private funding. Quote, we are excited to invest in this in the greatest city in the world to a stadium project and site improvements that will benefit Chicagoans and visitors, Bears Chairman George McCaskey said. More than a year ago, the Bears unveiled a plan in Arlington Heights that included residential, hotel, and retail space on more than 300 acres. And while they still own that land, they said their entire focus now is on the lakefront property. The stadium plans show that it has more than 70,000 seats under a fixed translucent dome. The new stadium would sit just south of Soldier Field, which would be torn down except for the historic colonnades. Those columns would then form part of a sweeping campus, which would feature parks, public areas, and youth athletic fields. Quote, you'll be indoors. You will be indoors. You will get all of the benefits of being indoors, but you will feel like you are outdoors, Bears President Warren said. The Bears said the project, would include creating more green space in the museum campus area along the lakefront. Quote, sports fields and gardens will replace the current stadium with Soldier Field's historic colonnades preserved as a tribute to Chicago's military veterans, the Bears said. Mayor Brandon Johnson said the plan is a win for the city of Chicago, and he is fully on board with the plan. As a lifelong Bears fan, it is an honor to be here to celebrate the Bears' commitment to remain the Chicago Bears, Mayor Brandon Johnson said. I really want to thank the McCaskey family and the entire Bears organization for betting on Chicago and announcing one of the largest private investments in our city's history. The group Friends of the Park, which in the past has opposed other lakefront developments, said it has questions about the proposal, releasing a statement saying in part, "We did not hear anything at the Bears news conference that could not take place at another Chicago location." Sports marketing expert Mark Gannis said there certainly are benefits for having a dome stadium in a city like Chicago, which could attract other major events in the future. Quote, there are significant benefits to building a dome stadium in a city like Chicago. It will attract not just a Super Bowl every decade or so, but on an ongoing basis, it will be the attraction for major events. The release said $325 million is required to open the stadium, $510 million is required to maximize the stadium and surrounding campus and optional infrastructure to enhance the campus, improve circulation, and maximize public economic benefit, which would total to $665 million. The mayor of Arlington Heights said that he expected today's news, but he still thinks that his city is the better option than the proposal for the city of Chicago. Now, why am I in favor of this? Especially since I have railed away against public tax dollars going to build stadiums for billionaire sports owners. I have been opposed to public tax dollars going towards stadiums that billionaire sports owners would own. Much like is the case with Soldier Field currently, the Bears would not own this stadium. The Bears would pitch in $2 billion of their own money and ultimately would not own the stadium. The city of Chicago would still own the stadium. They would control it. Additionally, having a domed stadium along the lakefront gives the city of Chicago the ability to host basketball tournaments, major college basketball tournaments indoors, Super Bowls, as was already mentioned, concerts in the wintertime, which they cannot currently hold at Soldier Field. You try to do a January concert at Soldier Field currently. Can't do it. So I have no problem with a private public venture such as this, where the public gets to own the entity when it's all said and done with. The private part of the entity, the Chicago Bears, get a new stadium to play in, which, let's be honest, needs to happen. Soldier Field is one of the oldest and is the smallest stadium in the entire NFL. They should have torn Soldier Field down the first time around instead of doing that goddamn spaceship bullshit. So I'm actually quite in favor of this. I got no problem with this whatsoever. The only issue I have about the entire thing is that I wish it was a retractable dome so that you could still open it up during the summer, during the fall when it's nice, so that you can still have some outdoor football. You can still do outdoor stadiums along the lakefront, outdoor stadium concerts along the lakefront in the summer, spring, summer, and fall. So that's the only part of it I don't like. Now, there's a big question when it comes to parking, like where the fuck is it going to go, considering this dome is going to sit on what is currently the south parking lot, but there have to be plans somewhere. Ideally, a massive underground parking garage under the entire stadium would probably work, but we'll have to see what they come up with as far as that. I'm going to go on record to say as I am officially in favor of this idea. The Bears belong in the city of Chicago. The Bears belong along the lakefront. That is what Chicago Bears football is. It should stay there. It doesn't belong in Arlington Heights. I said what the fuck I said. Forgive me. All right. Now on to the political news of the week. Now keep in mind, you guys are hearing this on Friday, April 26th for the first time. I am recording this. It is currently 7:14 p.m. on Thursday, April 25th. So there may be some developments to some of these news stories overnight and early tomorrow, and they will not appear on this podcast because I can't read the future. So I'm going to give you the news as is constituted up until 7:15 p.m. the Thursday before the broadcast. And up first, we have the new Ukraine aid bill that was signed by the president, which also includes a potential TikTok ban. I'm going to read to you now from NBC News. President Joe Biden on Wednesday signed into law a $95 billion package to provide critical aid to Ukraine and enact a provision that could lead to a nationwide ban of TikTok. Quote, "It's going to make America safer, it's going to make the world safer, and it continues America's leadership in the world, and everyone knows gives vital support to America's partners, Biden said on Wednesday in remarks praising the package's passage. And so they can defend themselves against threats to their sovereignty, he added. The Senate passed the long-awaited foreign aid package Tuesday in a 79-18 vote. 15 Republicans and 3 Democrats voted against the legislation. So let me just pause right there. When you see Republicans on your social media sites, or you see your crazy uncle with his red hat on, and he tells you, Joe Biden is sending all his money over to Ukraine, God damn it. He's the fucking problem. It passed the Senate 79-18. Democrats only have 51 fucking seats. That means a whole bunch of Senate Republicans had to vote for it in order to get it passed, numbnuts. The House passed the package on Saturday. Biden, on Wednesday, acknowledged the time it took for the bill to gain the bipartisan support it needed. Quote, "It was a difficult path," he said. "It should have been easier, and it should have gotten there sooner, but in the end, we did what America always does. We rose to the moment, came together, and we got it done." Biden condemned Russian President Vladimir Putin while stressing the urgency of providing aid to Ukraine, saying that in the next few hours, the U.S. will begin sending equipment to the country from its own stockpiles and then will replace those stockpiles with new American-made products that include Patriot missiles and artillery shells. In other words, we're helping Ukraine while at the same time investing in our own industrial base, strengthening our own national security, supporting jobs in nearly 40 states all across America, Biden said. America stands with our friends. We stand up against dictators, he added. We bow to no one, certainly not to Vladimir Putin, he went on to say. Biden reiterated his stance with Israel, his stance that Israel has a right to defend itself in its war against Hamas, and that the foreign aid package he signed into law will allow the U.S. to help replenish Israel's air defense and provide other critical aid in an effort to prevent attacks similar to the strikes carried out by Iran this month. Now, you will notice that while the Republicans are bitching and moaning that we should be defending our own borders instead of Ukraine's borders, that we should be doing spending that money here, that we should be the America First politicians that they sent us to Washington to be, none of them have said shit about the Israeli aid portion. Funny how that works out, huh? The president noted that the foreign aid package also provides $1 billion of additional humanitarian assistance to the people of Gaza, which he said would allow the U.S. to send food, medical supplies, and clean water to the region. Biden said border security should have been in the package and vowed to come back to that in another moment, another time, quote unquote. The president concluded his remarks without mentioning the package's crackdown on TikTok. I think that is because he realizes that that is the one that's going to piss off the most people in his own party. The package also includes $60 billion in aid to, or includes $60 billion in aid to Ukraine that President Zelensky said would give his country a chance at victory against Russia. It also includes $26 billion in assistance to Israel and humanitarian relief in Gaza, in addition to $8 billion for security in Taiwan and the Indo-Pacific. And it will give TikTok's China-based parent company 9 months, which the president could extend to a year, to sell the popular social media platform or be banned in the U.S. And that's where I'm going to stop this particular article, because TikTok isn't owned by China. And that's the whole ever-loving fucking point that people seem to keep missing. TikTok is owned by a variety of people. There was an original Chinese creator of TikTok that owns 20% of TikTok, but is retired and doesn't run TikTok anymore. You guys might know this gentleman who's the CEO of ByteDance as the person who runs TikTok. Well, he's Singaporean, and he lives in Singapore. And three of the five members of the board of directors for TikTok are Americans. And most of the ownership is a conglomeration of people from across the globe, including many of the rich Americans. I think there's one guy in Philadelphia that owns like 15% of TikTok all by himself. So there's no Chinese ownership to divest. There is nobody to sell their shares to. It's insane that people are freaking out over this TikTok quote-unquote ban. TikTok isn't going anywhere. It isn't going anywhere. Now, as far as how some members of Congress felt about the aid to the foreign countries that are in part of this bill, we will not turn our back on you, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said on the Senate floor moments before the vote. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky heralded Tuesday as an important day for America after months of GOP infighting over whether to keep funding Ukraine. McConnell said, quote, "We've turned the corner on the isolationist movement," end quote, and attributed the delay to two men, former Fox News anchor Tucker Carlson for his, quote, "demonization of Ukraine," and former President Donald Trump for his, quote, "mixed views," end quote, and earlier resistance to helping the country. In pressing for the legislation, Biden directed his team to follow a strategy of sticking to substance, not politics, to get Ukraine aid over the finish line, an administrative official said. That included staying in close contact with House Speaker Mike Johnson and his staff and laying off targeted attacks against him as much as possible while broadly urging House Republicans to act. It also means emphasizing the intelligence picture and the national security risks of inaction for America, the official said. In other words, he got some help from some Republicans, and he did so by not being the asshole that politicians tend to be, by not publicly going after Mike Johnson, by not publicly going after Mitch McConnell, because he realized he needed these guys' votes. And by working with them and explaining to them, listen, if we don't fucking do this, we're going to be in a world of hurt down the fucking road. So how about we get this passed? We get our allies the equipment that they need. We show that we can still be relied upon when it comes to our allies' needs. And fuck the far right wing of your party. And that's exactly what Mike Johnson wound up doing in the House of Representatives. He worked with Democrats to get this done, and now the far right wing of his party wants him out the same way that they want or wanted Kevin McCarthy out, because the current Republican Party is nothing but chaos. But we'll get back to that later. First, we need to move to New York, where a man set himself on fire outside the courthouse where Donald Trump's trial is going on, which is just fucking wild. I'm going to read to you now from Reuters. A man has died after setting himself on fire on Friday outside the New York courthouse where Donald Trump's historic hush money trial was taking place as jury selection wrapped up, but officials said he did not appear to have been targeting Trump. The man burned for several minutes in full view of television cameras that were set up outside the courthouse where the first ever criminal trial of a former U.S. president is being held. An NYPD spokesperson said the man was declared dead overnight at a hospital. Officials had previously said he was in critical condition. Witnesses said the man, who was in his 30s, pulled pamphlets from a backpack, threw them in the air before he doused himself with the liquid and set himself on fire. One of those pamphlets included references to, quote, "evil billionaires," end quote, but portions that were visible to a Reuters witness did not mention Trump. The NYPD said the man, who they identified as Max Azalero of St. Augustine, Florida, did not appear to be targeting Trump or others involved in the trial. Quote, "Right now we are labeling him as sort of a conspiracy theorist, and we are going from there," Tariq Shepard, a deputy police commissioner, said at a news conference. In an online manifesto, a man using that name said he set himself on fire and apologized to his friends, witnesses, and first responders. The post warns of, quote, an apocalyptic fascist coup, end quote, and criticizes cryptocurrency and U.S. politicians, but does not single out Trump in particular. A smell of smoke lingered in the plaza after the incident, according to Reuters witnesses, and a police officer sprayed a fire extinguisher on the ground. A smoldering backpack and a gas can were visible. So to everybody on the left, on my side of the political aisle, that says, look at this, another fucking loon from the Trump MAGA cult went off the deep end and set himself on fire. No, it does not appear to be. It appears to be somebody who had, obviously, mental issues, because you don't light yourself on fire if you don't have mental issues. And B, seemed like he might have just been opposed to oligarchy power in general, but not necessarily any one political movement. So I'm not going to label him as a Trumper. I'm not going to label him as a member of MAGA. And I'm going to say right here and now that, in my opinion, it was just a dude who had a screw loose and didn't get the help that he needed. And now he's dead. And I don't know what on this earth, outside of your own family, would be worth dying for like that. So I can't fit into my head those kinds of actions. You know what I mean? From New York, we move to the backwards ass state of Tennessee. And sorry to any Tennesseans listening, but holy shit, is your state fucked up. I'm going to read to you now from USA Today about a new law that was passed in Tennessee concerning teachers. Tennessee House Republicans on Tuesday passed legislation to allow some trained teachers and school staff to carry handguns, despite pleas from Democrats, students, and gun reform advocates to defeat the bill. Dozens of protesters in the galleries began chanting "Blood on your hands" as soon as the legislation passed, prompting Tennessee House Speaker Cameron Sexton to order state troopers to clear the galleries. Many protesters continue to chant and stomp down at lawmakers as the House floor fell into chaos over parliamentary issues. The bill could become law within weeks, as Tennessee Governor Bill Lee can either sign it into law or allow it to become law without his signature. Lee has never vetoed a bill. Armed teachers who will be required to undergo training at some opponents have argued is not intensive enough will be allowed to carry handguns in their classrooms and most campus situations without informing parents and most of their colleagues that they're armed. The school district's director of schools, the school principal, and the chief of the appropriate law enforcement agency must sign off on a staff member's authority to carry a concealed handgun, so school administrators could theoretically block any teacher from going armed on campus. The legislation also requires criminal and mental health background checks. On Tuesday, Republicans rejected several Democratic attempts to amend the bill, including requiring teachers to keep their handguns locked up except during a school security breach, holding teachers civilly liable for using their handgun on campus, and informing parents when guns are on campus. Yes, Republicans blocked all of those. Your parents don't need to know that your teacher has a gun, according to Tennessee Republicans. Your Tennessee Republican lawmakers are telling you that these teachers don't even need to lock up their guns. So in theory, a Tennessee teacher who has passed the requisite steps to carry a handgun in school could legally just leave it in their desk. Nothing is going to go wrong from this, will it? This is nothing but a bad disaster and tragedy waiting to happen if we do not ensure personal responsibility, Tennessee House Democratic Caucus Chair John Ray Clemens said. Our children's lives are at stake. Yes, they are. And once again, Republicans in this country have shown you that they care more about gun lobbyist money than they do children's lives. Guns have no place in school. That's it. No place in school. Don't give me any bullshit about a CSO from the police department. Don't give me any bullshit about an armed security guard. We need to make the schools tougher to get into, and we need to keep the guns out of our schools, and that includes teachers. And what I find ironic is that these same fucking Republicans won't vote to give teachers a raise. These same fucking Republicans will tell you that those teachers are indoctrinating your kids. These same fucking Republicans will tell you that these teachers are liberal hacks that are trying to change your kids into gay, queer furries that shit in fucking litter boxes, but they want them to carry guns. Make that shit make sense. Why on earth would you want a group of people that you think are harming your children purposely to be able to have guns while they harm your children? How is that logical? Where's the logic in any of that? Not to mention the fact I need to slow down here. I got a lot of thoughts racing through my head right now, and I want to start screaming and yelling, and I'm trying not to scream and yell. I'm trying to do these podcasts in a calm manner, but shit like this, you know, being somebody that still has a kid in sixth fucking grade getting ready to go into junior high, shit like this bugs me. Now, in Tennessee, you can't get an abortion. You can't get a free school lunch. You can't get help paying for your education. You can't get decent after-school programs. But you can get a teacher that's packing heat. Republicans, your fucking values are fucked. They're so out of whack. But this is what happens when red states are all red and they control the state house. They pass shit like this. This is an abomination of a bill. It puts more of the problem into the areas we're trying to keep the problem out of. It is fucking maddening. Maddening. Excuse me while I take a hit off this. We're at the 27 mark of this particular recording right now, so we're probably about halfway through this podcast, and that just made me want to light a fucking doob. So give me a moment, boys and girls.
That's what I'm talking about, you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
All right, from the backwards woods of Tennessee to the Supreme Court, the highest court in the land. We got a lot of activity with the Supreme Court. And in this particular instance, we're going to be talking about their refusal to hear Carrie Lake's last attempt to overturn her 2022 loss. I'm going to read to you now from Forbes. The Supreme Court declined to take up Arizona Senate candidate Carrie Lake's lawsuit claiming electronic ballot machines violate the law, the Republican politician's latest appeal, as she claims, without evidence, her loss in the 2022 gubernatorial race was rife with fraud. Lake's attorneys asked the High Court to intervene in a similar way to how it intervened in the 2000 presidential election when it shut down a Florida recount after concerns about vote tabulation on paper ballots. Quote, although electronic voting machines were meant to remedy snafus like the 2000 Florida recount, the flaws that petitioners unearthed in electronic voting machines make hanging chads, the very problem the machines were meant to solve, seem like a blessing, Lake's lawyers wrote in their appeal to the Supreme Court. At least there, humans could see and touch ballots and punch cards, that statement went on to say. However, the Ninth Circuit heavily disputed these claims, detailing exactly how the Arizona votes are counted. According to the court, Arizona voters mark their votes on paper ballots, which are then fed into an electronic machine. Those paper ballots are then retained by authorities for recounts and post-election audits and are also hand-counted by representatives of both political parties. Arizona stores voting machines with tamper-resistant seals and mandates that they cannot be connected to the internet, wireless devices, or external networks. Quote, in the end, none of plaintiffs' allegations supports a plausible inference that their individual votes in future elections will be adversely affected, the court ruled before denying the appeal. A Trump ally, Lake has made voter fraud allegations a centerpiece for her political image and has falsely insisted she rightfully won the 2022 race for governor and Trump won the 2020 presidential election. Lake and Fincham eventually conceded to the district court that no Dominion voting machines were ever hacked in Arizona elections, but instead argued their security breach, quote-unquote, could threaten future elections, calling the machines, quote, black boxes running software outside the public domain, end quote. However, the Ninth Circuit already ruled that Lake's speculative allegations, quote unquote, were not sufficient to establish an injury against the plaintiffs. Both Lake and Fincham are running for office again in 2024. Lake, a close ally of former President Donald Trump, is running for the Senate seat vacated by outgoing Senator Kyrsten Sinema. She will be up against Representative Ruben Gallego, a Democratic member of Congress, representing most of Phoenix. While Fincham, a member of the far-right Oath Keepers militia, is running for a state Senate seat in Prescott, Arizona. So, good on the Supreme Court for kicking this thing out the front door because Carrie Lake has no fucking case. She's a fucking loon. She's a fucking conspiracy theorist. She lies every time she opens her fucking mouth. And finally, the Supreme Court has shut this shit down. And Carrie Lake can go on whining and pissing and moaning on Twitter all she wants and appear at all the fucking rallies she wants with Donald Trump. But guess what she is never going to be? The governor of Arizona. And I got news for you, Carrie. If you can hear this, guess what you're not going to be after 2024? The senator from Arizona. You burned that bridge. Now, will Fincham win his state Senate seat in Prescott, Arizona? Who the fuck knows? I don't know shit about the local politics in Prescott, Arizona. And yeah, maybe he does win. Who the hell knows? But when you are a national figure like Carrie Lake, running for statewide office in Arizona, and part of your campaign to get that statewide office was to tell Arizonans how much of a bag of shit John McCain and the McCain family is, you are done winning statewide races in Arizona. Period. And that's what she did. She shit all over John McCain, she shit all over Meghan McCain, and she shit all over the McCain family. Now, am I sitting here particularly defending the McCain family? No. There are things I liked about John McCain. There are things I didn't like about John McCain. There are things I like about Meghan McCain. There are things I don't like about Meghan McCain. But in Arizona, you do not shit on the McCain family and expect to pull the requisite number of Republican votes to win a statewide race. She's too fucking stupid to understand that. So that's exactly what she did. She went after the McCains. And now that she's coming up on the 2024 election, she realizes that she's going to get her fucking ass kicked again. She's starting to suck up to Meghan McCain, and Meghan McCain is not fucking having it. Carrie Lake has tweeted at Meghan McCain a few different times, and Meghan McCain has told her to fuck off publicly on Twitter. And it's just not going to happen, Carrie. Your political career in Arizona is done. You are now reduced to a carnival barker that is forever going to bitch, moan, and cry that she was robbed of an election. You are the female version of Trump. Congratulations on being part of the fucking problem. Speaking of being part of the problem, we learned this week that as the hush money trial in New York is going on for Donald Trump, And that's what's happening in New York right now. He is under indictment, 31 felony counts for paying off Stormy Daniels and then misclassifying it in his, business accounts. He can't shut the fuck up. He's under a gag order to not attack the jurors, not attack witnesses, not attack members of the court. And he takes the Truth Social every fucking day, and he attacks jurors, and he attacks officials of the court, and he attacks witnesses. And there was a hearing this week as to what to do with him in regards to the over 10 gag order violations that prosecutors have alleged this week. And we learned this week that Secret Service has actually been preparing on what to do if he's jailed for violating that gag order, because that's how much he won't shut up. I'm going to read to you now from ABC News. The U.S. Secret Service held meetings and started planning for what to do if former President Donald Trump were to be held in contempt in his criminal hush money trial, and Judge Juan Merchan opted to send him to short-term confinement, officials familiar with the situation told ABC News. Merchan, on Tuesday, reserved decision on the matter after a contentious hearing. Prosecutors said at this point, they are seeking a fine. We are not yet seeking an incarceratory penalty, Assistant District Attorney Chris Conroy said, but the defendant seems to be angling for that. Officials do not necessarily believe Merchan would put Trump in a holding cell in the courthouse, but they are planning for contingencies nonetheless. There have not been discussions yet about what to do if Trump is convicted and sentenced to prison. The former president is on trial once again on felony charges of falsifying business records to hide reimbursement for a hush money payment made to his then attorney Michael Cohen, who then paid adult film actress Stormy Daniels ahead of the 2016 presidential election. The Secret Service declined to comment on specific plans in the matter. Quote, under federal law, the United States Secret Service must provide protection to current government leaders, former presidents and first ladies, visiting heads of state and other individuals designated by the President of the United States, the agency said in a statement. For all settings around the world, we study locations and develop comprehensive and layered protective models that incorporate state-of-the-art technology, protective intelligence, and advanced security tactics to safeguard our protectees. Beyond that, we do not comment on specific protective operations. Prosecutors argued that Trump violated the limited gag order, which prohibits statements about witnesses, jurors, and lawyers in the case, other than the Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg, on at least 10 separate occasions this month. Trump's lawyer said prosecutors had not proven posts Trump made on social media criticizing Cohen and Daniels were willful violations of the gag order, telling Merchan the former president was defending himself from attacks by the likely witnesses. Defense lawyers also argued that the gag order is vague and allows Trump to make, quote, political statements, end quote. This motherfucker is going to talk himself into prison. He cannot shut the fuck up. He is in fucking capable of shutting the fuck up. And listen, I love to talk. I talk to everybody everywhere I go. You run into me at the grocery store, I'm going to have a half an hour conversation with you next to the fucking peanut butter. If you're pumping gas in the next aisle, I'm going to have at least a 10-minute conversation with you right there and then. However, if my very freedom was on the line and my lawyers were telling me, hey, dude, you're under a gag order, you need to shut the fuck up, you wouldn't hear fucking dick out of me. There would be no TikToks. There would be no podcasts. There would be no blog articles. There would be no Facebook posts. There would be fucking nothing. Nada. Squash. Squadoosh. Zilch. Zippo. Silence. He can't do it. And people are getting sick and fucking tired of the act. And he's going to talk himself into a fucking jail cell. Sooner or later, he's going to talk himself into a fucking jail cell. And I'm here for it. Like, I'm eating this shit up with a spoon. I'm eating every bit of this shit up with a spoon. Every single person that is against him in the world, he attacks on social media. And he's talking about the fucking jurors. As a matter of fact, they're talking about the jurors so much that one potential juror asked to be dismissed during the jury selection because she believed that her information had already been leaked by Fox News. And sure as shit, Jesse Waters had her information and put it out on Fox fucking News. That is straight up jury tampering. Jesse Waters should be indicted. That information isn't fucking public. There's absolutely no reason for Jesse Waters to have that information unless it came directly from the Trump camp. Which tells you that the Trump legal team or Trump's campaign is funneling private information about private jurors, information that is not released to the general public, so that that information can be disseminated on public television in order to intimidate the jurors on this case. These people are scum and they all need to go to prison. And like I said earlier, people have had enough. They are not only just pissing off the left even more. They are not only just pissing off independents even more. They're pissing off their own fucking party even more. We had the Pennsylvania primary this week. Nikki Haley has been out of this thing for weeks. She dropped out weeks ago. And she still pulled 17% in the Pennsylvania primary. Dems also had a lot of write-in candidates. And keep in mind, these are closed primaries, so you can't cross over. You have to be a registered Republican to vote in a Republican primary. You got to be a registered Democrat to vote in a Democratic primary. One in five registered Republicans voted against Trump in that primary. I'm going to read to you now from WHYY. Voting in the presidential primary wrapped up in Pennsylvania on Tuesday evening. The swing state is critical in deciding who will win the White House this November. Traffic at polling stations tended to be light, reflecting the low voter turnout, a fact supported by polling data that shows that voters here are not enthused by their choices. Quote, there is a general sense of disappointment right now among the electorate with the choices, especially at the presidential level, with both Donald Trump and Joe Biden having fairly low favorable ratings. Christopher Bork, professor of political science at Muhlenberg College, told WHYY Studio 2. A lot of voters don't like either of them, and that doesn't really create a situation with a lot of energy to show up, quote unquote. However, Boric added it could be the fact that the top races were foregone conclusions, which I tend to lean towards. If you already know who the nominees are going to be, and we already know that each person, Joe Biden and Donald Trump, have secured enough electoral votes to be the nominees, then you don't have to waste your time in a primary. If all you gave a shit about was the presidency. And so, as a result, a lot of the down-ballot races get neglected because the top race is already decided. Quote, the presidential race and the U.S. Senate race in Pennsylvania were largely uncontested races, so there wasn't a lot of drama that would bring in maybe more casual voters, he said. It just wasn't there. In Philadelphia, less than 18% of registered voters made their way to the polling stations, considerably lower than the 20 to 25% usually seen on primary day. Being a city of Democrats, that would have mostly affected Biden. Meanwhile, only 29% of the registered voters across the state voted, also down from primaries in 2016 and 2020. Another challenge for Biden, the number of write-in votes that were cast, many of which are the result of the grassroots movement of voters concerned about the Israel-Hamas conflict. Results from Pennsylvania's Democratic presidential primary show that so far more than 60,000 voters statewide chose to write in options on their ballots, according to a vote count released by AP Wednesday night. Excuse me. In comparison, the vote total for write-in votes in 2020 was just over 34,000, according to state election officials. We are very excited about the amount of people who participated, Miracle Jones, an uncommitted Pennsylvania organizer, told WHYY News. Given the fact that this was a volunteer-run, volunteer-led organizing effort, the breakdown of how many of those write-in votes were uncommitted is still being reviewed as of Wednesday night. Since Pennsylvania does not have an uncommitted option on its primary ballots, voters who wanted to use their ballot to voice their discontent with President Biden's stance on the war in Gaza chose the write-in option. The campaign known as Uncommitted PA followed movements in other states like Michigan and Minnesota, where Democratic primary voters use the uncommitted option on their ballot to cast a protest vote. Organizers had a goal of securing at least 40,000 uncommitted write-in votes. That number represented about half of the votes Biden won the state by in 2020 following Tuesday's primary results. Organizers of the write-in campaign to protest President Biden claimed a victory, saying they had exceeded their expectations. Jones says the group will decide later how, if at all, it will continue their movement into the general election in November. Nikki Haley ended up with 17% of the vote across the state, bringing Trump's share of the total vote down to 83%. By comparison, Trump won 92% of the primary vote in 2020. He went on to lose to Joe Biden in that state in the general election. Some of Trump's weakest performances were in the suburbs surrounding Philadelphia, the critical collar counties, where Haley won more than 20% of the vote. You look at the suburban Philadelphia, of course, which is just an enormous driver of election outcomes in Pennsylvania, and you have Haley pull almost a quarter of the votes in counties like Montgomery and Chester. It's a warning sign, Boric said. There's no other way around that for the Trump campaign. So let's talk about this for just a second before we get into our last news story of this particular podcast episode. You have apathy on the Democratic side, right? The races are decided. Democratic voter turnout in primaries is usually lower. Joe Biden's already the candidate. And so people are pointing to these write-in candidates and low voter turnout and saying, see, this is a problem for Joe Biden. You got to also remember these are closed primaries. None of the independents really got a chance to vote unless they opted to do to register with one of the two parties in order to levy a protest vote. That didn't happen a lot. They got some Democrats to protest vote. Okay, those Democrats, I believe, are for the most part still going to vote for Joe Biden in the fall. The problem lies with the supporters that Haley is still pulling in the primary. Because you see, the voters on the left, there will be some that will not vote for Joe Biden, but for the most part, they are going to understand that Donald Trump getting back into the White House is that much of a fucking problem, and that they need to show up in November to vote. The people who are voting for Nikki Haley rather than Donald Trump in these primaries, they're not going to turn around and vote for Joe Biden. They don't love Joe Biden. But they're people who would sit back and say, we survived 4 years of Joe Biden. We can survive four more years in order to keep Donald Trump out. And they may not vote for Joe Biden, but they might write somebody else in. They might forego the presidential race altogether. They might write Nikki Haley in just to send a fucking message. The bottom line is that Trump already lost that state in 2020. And if he's got 17%, voting for somebody else, narrow that down to 10%. Hell, call it 7% in the general election. He can't afford to lose 2%, let alone 7 to 10%. There's no fucking way in hell he wins Pennsylvania with these numbers. There's no way. And if he doesn't win Pennsylvania, it is extraordinarily difficult to win the White House based on the rest of the electoral map. You know, he's going to get some big states. He's going to get Texas. I don't believe Texas is going to go blue for one fucking second. He's going to be able to pull those big numbers out of Florida. But he is not going to be able to pull the numbers he needs to pull out of Pennsylvania to get those electoral votes. He is pissing off his own party, and they are willing to deal with another 4 years of Joe Biden to get rid of both of them. Because you get another term out of Biden, he can't run again, not to mention the fact he'll be old as fuck. And Donald Trump, he'll be too fucking old 4 years from now if he's not in fucking prison, if he's not fucking dead, if he's not fucking living in another country because he's escaped to exile himself somewhere. If he can't pull Pennsylvania, he can't pull the Electoral College. And we're seeing it in primary after primary after primary. Nikki Haley's people are flat out telling you, we're not going to vote for him. We're not voting for Joe Biden, but we will not vote for Donald Trump. And that is going to sink him. But it is not going to sink him nearly as much as all of the legal troubles he is currently facing. And that's where we go for our next story. And that is that the state of Arizona has become the latest state to indict several fake electors and several Trump allies in their efforts to overturn the 2020 election results. We've seen this happen in Georgia, where Trump is part of a RICO violation charge. We've seen fake electors charged in Michigan, where they are starting to cut deals, and we fully expect more allies of Trump to get indicted in Michigan. And now Arizona has stepped up to the plate, and they have laid some indictments on the table. And because CNN pisses off these fucking maggots so goddamn much, we're going to read the article from CNN on this one. A grand jury in Arizona has handed up an indictment against former President Donald Trump's allies over their efforts to overturn his 2020 election loss, including the fake electors from that state and several individuals connected to his campaign. Boris Epstein, a former White House aide who remains one of Trump's closest advisors, former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, and Rudy Giuliani are among those who have been indicted, according to a source familiar with the investigation. Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays, a Democrat, announced the indictment Wednesday night, focusing on the 11 individuals who acted as pro-Trump electors in the state. The names of several other indicted defendants remain redacted, Mays said in a statement Wednesday, until those people have been served. A state grand jury made up of everyday regular Arizonans has now handed down felony indictments for all 11 Republican electors, as well as several others connected with the scheme, Mays said. These are serious indictments, but this is the first hurdle the state must pass in our constitutional criminal justice system. We intend to prove these crimes were committed beyond a reasonable doubt, quote unquote. Excuse me. Damn. Sometimes you just got to stop the podcast and blow your goddamn nose. And since we are enjoying this lull together, I'm going to take another hit off the dube. Excuse me. Nice. While Trump is not among those charged in Arizona, the details in the indictment suggest he is, quote, unindicted co-conspirator number one. The indictment in Arizona includes 9 counts from conspiracy and forgery to engaging in fraudulent schemes. Because the indictment remains partially redacted, it is unclear what charges Trump allies such as Meadows, Epstein, and Giuliani face. Quote, in Arizona and the United States, the people elected Joseph Biden as president on November 3rd, 2020, the indictment reads. Unwilling to accept this fact, defendants and unindicted co-conspirators scheme to prevent the lawful transfer of the presidency to keep unindicted conspirator one, in office against the will of Arizona voters, end quote. Yeah, that sounds like they're talking about Trump. I mean, who else is staying in office, right? The scheme, according to the indictment, called for the fake electors to fraudulently vote for Trump, quote, falsely claiming to be the duly elected and qualified electors for president and vice president of the United States from the state of Arizona, end quote. Defendants deceived the citizens of Arizona by falsely claiming that those votes were contingent only on a legal challenge that would change the outcome of the election, the indictment continues. In reality, defendants intended that their false votes for Trump and Pence would encourage Pence to reject the Biden-Harris votes on January 6th, 2021, regardless of the outcome of the legal challenge. This scheme failed on January 6, 2021, when then-Vice President Mike Pence accepted the electoral votes for Joe Biden, the indictment says. The case in Arizona adds scrutiny to actions taken on Trump's behalf after the last election. It also comes as Trump's legal team will argue before the Supreme Court Thursday that he's immune from prosecution in the federal election interference case. At the same time, Trump is on trial in New York related to hush money payments to cover up an alleged affair before the 2016 election. Epstein has not been charged before in connection with the 2020 post-election efforts to reverse Trump's loss. Serving as a legal advisor to Trump, Epstein speaks to the former president regularly and during certain stretches multiple times a day. He is widely considered one of Trump's most ferociously loyal advisors since joining Trump's 2016 campaign. Epstein accompanied Trump to New York after his criminal indictment and sat with him in the courtroom while he was arraigned. He was also seen traveling with Trump to arraignments in both Georgia and Washington, D.C. While he does not represent in any of his current legal cases, Epstein has played a critical role in the hiring of many of Trump's lawyers, as well as in some of their departures. After withdrawing from representing Trump in special counsel investigations into Trump's handling of classified documents, Timothy Parlator, who was brought on by Epstein, said differences with Epstein spurred his departure. "He did everything he could to try and block us," Parlatore said on CNN. Others in Trump's orbit have long said that Epstein's brash behavior could be a liability for Trump. While the names of several defendants in the Arizona case remain redacted because they have not yet been served, the indictment does describe their roles in the alleged plot. Other individuals charged in the Arizona indictment, but whose names have been redacted, the source familiar with the CNN investigation told CNN, include Trump allies Mike Roman, a 2020 campaign official, Trump campaign lawyer Jenna Ellis, and conservative attorney John Eastman. Roman, Ellis, and Eastman also were charged in the election subversion case in Georgia, as were Meadows and Giuliani. Ellis pleaded guilty to one charge in the Georgia case. The others have pleaded not guilty. Meadows, whose name is redacted in the indictment but was listed in Trump's chief of staff in 2020, quote, sorry, hang on. What the hell? I got a little runny nose going on now. God damn it, I better not be getting sick. Can't have it. Whew. Quote, worked with members of the Trump campaign to coordinate and implement the false Republican electors' votes in Arizona and six other states, end quote, the indictment said, and was involved in the many efforts to keep Trump in power despite his defeat at the polls. This is part of a multi-state scheme, in order to falsely seat slates of electors in multiple states, swing states, to just say that Trump won, even though he didn't win. This was organized from the top down. It was organized by Trump, Giuliani, Mark Meadows, Eastman, and the lot of them. It occurred in Georgia. It occurred in Michigan. It occurred in Arizona that we know of. And they're saying that it was six states. Now, one of the other states that is believed that this happened in is Nevada. So I would expect some indictments to be coming out of Nevada soon as well. At the end of the day, all of these people have decisions to make. Rudy Giuliani, Mark Meadows, Jenna Ellis, Eastman, Epstein, they're all looking at prison time in multiple states, with the exception of Epstein. This is his first indictment. Does Rudy Giuliani, in the end, go to prison for Donald Trump? Does Mark Meadows, in the end, go to prison for Donald Trump? Does Eastman ultimately go to prison for Donald Trump? I say no, but I got to be honest with you. The state of the Republican Party is so fucked up these days that anything is possible. I mean, anything is possible. Think about this for just one moment, okay? Just draw a mental image of what I'm about to tell you. The presumptive Republican presidential nominee for the 2024 presidential election that's going to occur in just a handful of months is arguing in front of the Supreme Court that he has total immunity from anything he did wrong while in office because he did it while being president. But he can't attend those hearings and hear those arguments because he has to be in a courtroom in New York where he's under 31 criminal felony indictments for paying off a porn star to stay quiet during the 2016 presidential election. So he can't attend one of his trials because he has to attend the other trial. The person that's the head of the GOP's election integrity is now indicted in Arizona for his lack of election integrity. the top officials in the Republican Party in the Senate and in the House, the Speaker of the House and Mitch McConnell, are working with Democrats to keep the government open and keep Ukraine rolling. So now the far right wing faction wants to kick out their second Speaker of the House in 2 years. They are the least productive Congress in the history of the United States, passing 39 bills, I believe the number is, in 2 years. They have done nothing but investigate their political opponents. They have been investigating Joe Biden and his son for 15 months, and they keep saying that they got him dead to rights. But every time they go on a news station, they say, well, we don't actually have any evidence of it. We just know it to be true. Top conservative talking heads are taking to platforms like Twitter and Truth Social and openly apologizing to Vladimir Putin for us assisting our ally in the region against an unlawful invasion by Vladimir Putin. And Donald Trump's daughter-in-law now runs the Republican National Committee and has access to all of the Republican donor money that she can now funnel to her father-in-law's legal defense. That is the state of the Republican Party today, with more indictments coming. It is absolute fucking chaos how anybody could vote for the Republicans at this point in time is beyond me. But that's where we're at. Arizona has now become the latest state to lay out multiple indictments for multiple Trump allies, and the key part of it all, those fake electors. You got to remember, those fake electors are regular old average Joes. They're plumbers and nurses and school teachers and average people in states like Georgia and Michigan and Arizona that are trying to serve, that are trying to do some civic duty, and got caught up in this bullshit scheme to be fake electors to name Donald Trump the president, or the winner of the presidential electoral college votes for those states wrongfully. Are those people going to go to prison for Trump? Are the regular old Joes, you know, lunch pail Joe, is he going to go to fucking prison because he falsely said, yeah, Trump won Arizona. Yeah, Trump won Michigan. Yeah, Trump won Georgia. Remember, the first three of the six states that this happened in. The Republican Party is imploding in real time right before our eyes. Donald Trump is going to spend the rest of his fucking life either in a courtroom, in a prison, or on the run. He's going to bleed the Republican Party dry in the process. He's going to bleed all of his supporters dry in the process. And when it's all said and done with, he will not be reelected president in 2024. He will not be sworn in January of 2025. At least I believe he will not win and be sworn in January of 2025. And his supporters are going to look around and realize that they have been shelling over their hard-earned money for months and months and months. Fuck it. Years and years and years to prop up a perpetual professional con man. And some of them are going to lose their law licenses as a result of it. And some of them are going to go to prison as a result of it. For what? A man that wouldn't piss on you if your head was on fire. A man who doesn't give two fucks about you. A man that doesn't give two fucks about anybody other than himself. He would throw his own fucking children in front of a moving train to save himself any day of the week. So I, for one, am glad to see these new indictments come down. Keep bringing up Nevada, you're up. Where are the other two states? I want to see some indictments out of them. Let's get Giuliani, Eastman, and the whole fucking lot of them indicted in every one of these fucking states. Let's get all of the fake electors indicted, and let's roll them all over so they all turn on fucking Trump. And let's hand Trump prison sentences in six different states. Oh, by the way, that case that's going on before the Supreme Court where his lawyers are arguing that he has immunity, today, Thursday the 25th of April 2024. They actually said in court that if a president, a sitting president, ordered the assassination of his political opponent, that that would be considered an official act of the presidency and therefore be covered under presidential immunity forever and ever. Amen. You can never prosecute him for it. Are you fucking kidding me? Take the humor out of it for a minute, folks. Think about it seriously. The guy who wants the job, the guy who wants to be president, has his lawyers arguing that if he gets that job again, he can assassinate anyone he wants and never be held accountable for it. That should scare the fucking shit out of you. That should make you want to vote for Joe Biden, even if you don't like what he's doing in Gaza, even if you don't like the fact that he's not as far left as you thought he would be, even if you don't like the fact that he said racist things in the past. If the fact that Donald Trump has his lawyers in front of the Supreme Court arguing that he is immune from having anybody he wants assassinated doesn't scare you to vote against Donald Trump and for the only other person that has a chance of beating him, Joe Biden, then you better be ready to own whatever the fuck comes next. If you still want to go in and cast your protest vote in the general election and we wind up getting another 2016 where Donald Trump actually wins because enough people said, yeah, I'm going to cast a protest vote, you better be ready to own that shit. Because I'm going to be right here making sure that you know what you did. Get registered to vote, get a plan together, get your friends and family together, get your coworkers together, and make sure you go vote for Joe Biden, or we are not going to have a country left, ladies and gentlemen. Now, let me blow my nose one more time, and we're going to wrap this thing up. All right. I'm going to tell you to tune in next week, but I don't know how I'm going to get a podcast in next week unless I do it on Wednesday. And I might sit down and do a podcast Wednesday night. And you might be asking yourself, why Wednesday? Why not do it on Thursday like you normally do so that you can air it on Friday? Because on Thursday morning, I am departing for a long weekend in Houston, Texas. I have a behind-the-scenes tour of Mission Control from a gentleman there who's a flight director and who follows me on TikTok. Can't wait to talk to the guy in person. I actually interviewed him on my off-topic podcast a couple of episodes back. Go listen to that episode. It was fun. But I'm going to be in Houston, Texas, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and we depart back for Chicago on Sunday. So I'm going to try and get an episode in next week on Wednesday, but it's going to miss some of the end of the week news. So we'll see what comes about. We'll see what news there is to actually discuss by Wednesday to see if we can do another one. Having said that, my plan is that the following week when we get back will be the week that my wife and I do our off-topic episode and discuss our 25 years of marriage together. We met each other in May of 1997. We moved in with each other in May of 1998, and we got married May 7th, 1999. And so May 7th of this year marks 25 years of marriage, and I think we're going to try and do a podcast episode with the two of us where we just kind of generally talk about what those 25 years have brought, what is contained within 25 years of sharing a life together. So make sure you subscribe to the Off Topic podcast to catch that one. My next episode coming up on Off Topic is actually going to be with Hawk out in San Francisco. So go check out all of those episodes. I recently did an interview with V from Under the Desk News. I have an episode coming up in the near future with Pinky Patel from TikTok and stand-up comedy fame. If you're a fan of Pinky Patel, make sure you get over and subscribe to Off Topic. Once again, it's $4.20 a month. It's less than $5 a month. So it's $2.50 per hour of entertainment. You can't go wrong. All right, folks, that's all I got for you this week. Don't forget to check out the website, oldhippiemedia.com. Order yourself a book, order yourself some merch, subscribe to the other podcast. Make sure you subscribe to my blog so that you get notified when a new blog piece goes up. And make sure you check in next week for another new episode of the Second Half Podcast with Tom Powell, if I can squeeze one in. Until then, as always, stay grateful.